Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast.
Hey, sluts. I'm your
You're the worst. Go ahead, Aki. Finish it. Do the intro.
Hey, everybody. It's us. Have fun. Here you go. Damn, even at 40%, that's still loud. Shit.
I don't know why.
That was for you, Aki. This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Aki's here being annoying. Purnell is here, and Chris is here. How's everybody doing?
I'm also annoying. You just don't know it yet.
Yay.
I'm doing absolutely fucking amazing.
I'm doing all right. It could be the Matt. I'm running on fumes today. But
you had a busy weekend, didn't you?
Yeah, and it wrapped up with airlines not being well. I guess they're technically doing what airlines do, so didn't get a lot of sleep last night. So but that's okay because I'm getting some sleep tonight.
Nice.
But other than that, I'm pretty good. Can't complain.
So what'd you do this weekend?
Went to Chicago, hung out with some friends, ate good food, went to a hot sauce convention.
Ooh, and tell me about that.
Oh, it was great. I got indigestion because I sampled so many hot sauces. Probably the first time in my life. Like, I've done a hot sauce convention before, but I never got that indigestion before.
Never heard of one of those. I want to go to one of those now because I just finished off a Carolina Reaper hot sauce that I had today.
Oh, you'd have a ball there then. And Joe might too because they actually do wrestling in the middle of it.
Oh, Lord.
Do they involve hot sauce in the wrestling?
I don't think I don't think that would make a very fun match, at least not for the wrestlers. But
well, no, it would be miserable.
Spectators would love it. The spectators would love it. Speaking from personal belief, but no, they don't do that for the wrestlers. But they do have wrestlers, and one of my friends who's into wrestling that was with me apparently recognized somebody from the circuit, so from like the amateur wrestling circuit. So wouldn't surprise me if like you guys would recognize them too. It was a great time. They had the pepper eating contest like they usually do, where the people eat boot jalokias or Reaper. I don't know what they're up to this year. And then they make them sit for 5 minutes without milk or anything and taunt them with a toilet and a porta potty because they're going to potentially throw it all up. It's interesting.
Or shit, I would never do it. Though.
Do they? I really hope they lucky. Throw it up. I'd much rather throw it up, honestly.
Burning out the butt. Ow! But yeah, it was fun.
Wait, when you're trying to have a sound effect for that.
Gargling hot ass.
Oh. Yeah.
There it is.
When you were trying the different hot sauces, did they tell you how many skull units each one was?
Well, they didn't rate them by like, I'm sure that they would have known if I asked, but they didn't tell me what the Scoville was, unless it was a scenario where it was like, oh man, this one boards in the bowels of hell, you know, but really it's just, hey, here's our sauces. Take some home with you, please. Try them all, starting from the mildest, and they'll describe, like, you know, what goes into making the sauce, and you sample it, and they'll move you down the line, and eventually you get to the point where it's like, okay, well, and they don't even stop. That's the other thing. They know who their audience is. So, you know, if you're like at a restaurant or something, they'd be like, are you sure you want to eat this one? This is kind of hot. If anything, here, they goad you into it. There was no stopping. It was like, here you go. I was like, oh, I don't know if I should be eating that one. And then my friend's like, yoink. I'm like, oh, shit, I got to keep up with him. So I ate everything he ate. And that guy has a cast iron stomach. So yeah, I hope he listens to this episode someday because he may go, oh, yeah, I remember we did do that. And he's not lying. But he does listen to the show sometimes. But
I'm trying to find a new hot sauce because I just finished that one and it was like 30,000 Scoville units. And I just want something that's like, around 45, 50.
Well, I can definitely promise you, I got none of that shit. I'm old. My stomach ain't doing that no more. I actually probably have some in my fridge that might hit that note for you. The like scorned woman. Have you ever had that one?
No, I've never. I have just recently. It's just this year that I got into hot sauces. So the ones I got were all from this value pack that I got from Sam's Club, actually. Uh-huh. And it started off at like a couple hundred, and it went up to two of them that were around 30,000. And I just dumped the last one into a thing of tacos today because it wasn't hot enough.
You would love a convention then or an event like that, because I'm pretty sure this place is going to go higher than you're going to get at Costco.
I'm sure it goes significantly higher than probably what I can handle. I'm going up intermittently. I'm sure that place probably has shit that's over a million Scoville units, and I'm pretty sure that would just kill me outright. I don't think I would survive that.
I had a plastic sample spoon of a hot sauce, and my mouth wouldn't stop burning for 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's probably around 50,000 Scoville unit range if you don't eat hot sauces.
Even knowing hot sauce, not the thing, I eat hot sauce. Yes, it was that bad. Like, I am not in the upper echelon or anything like that, and they cater to everybody. So if you're that guy who just, like, killed his mouth and is looking for the next big high, they'll give you something that'll make you see your future children. Like, it's just not, it can get bad.
So bad now.
Well, like I said, I mean, I would, like I said, I had the sauce, look up Scorned Woman and Ghost Train. Those are two hot ones I have in my fridge that I use very, very, very sparingly because for me, they are extremely hot. If you end up eating those and saying that's nothing, may God have mercy on your mouth because I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, those two sauces are very hot. And they're probably some of the hottest ones I've had personally in my house. I have another one whose name I don't remember, but it was given to me and it has a purple hippo on it. And that guy gave up hot sauce because it wrecked his stomach to the point where he had to stop eating hot sauce.
Oh,
so, yeah, it's real. It can get real bad.
The last two I had was a Carolina Reaper one, which I don't even feel anything from it anymore. And a Scorpion Reaper, and they're around 30,000, both the sauces were. And when I had the Scorpion Reaper one, it about killed me because I added a little too much. And now I literally dumped the entire bottle of the Carolina Reaper one into just one cooking of tacos. And I don't think there's enough heat to it now because I got used to it just that quick.
You had a good opportunity for a burn on Jacob, and you just passed it up.
I don't think of Jacob. I'm sorry.
Just like Jacob's wife during sex, I feel nothing.
I like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, what I'm going to mention is that you have to remind me next week because I don't remember off the top of my head, and I had to mail my stuff to me because you know you can't carry sauce on a plane or anything or whatever. But I can tell
I'm
you
going to make you feel bad real quick here. The Scorned Woman hot sauce that uses red habanero, jalapeno, and black pepper at Scoville rating is around 6,000.
Oh, gosh. You're telling me you're just like.
I eat stuff that is five times hotter than that.
Give me a name. I need a name of a sauce that you eat because I need to look this up to see if I ever come across it. It was just a
sample platter. Hold on a second. I'll see if I can find it at Sam's because it didn't actually have the name of any sauce. It just told you what the pepper was that was in it and how many Scovilles it was.
Welcome to the Sampling Molten Lava Podcast.
I mean, yeah, basically.
Hey, we're going to get those hot ones, like, you know, crowd coming in.
Chris, do you like hot sauce?
I am, like, a medium spice person all around, but yes, I love a good, tasty hot sauce. But I don't do the challenge ones. Huh?
I am a zero hot person. I don't like spice crap.
Yeah, it was Ladaki and Purnell are talking about. Oh.
I'm posting what I got in the scheduled stuff. This was the exact thing I had. So it doesn't have the names of any of the shit on it, sadly.
Oh, that sucks, because I would have totally been down for that. Because now I'm looking, like, I'm trying to find what the Scoville, where, I'm not sure where you found that list at, but I'm trying to find the Scoville unit of the Ghost Train Sauce I have.
Yeah, I'm trying to look that up, too. When I looked up the other one, just on the front in the search, it told me that it was only, like, 5,940. I think it was for the Scorned Woman one. But I didn't see one for the Ghost Train one yet.
It is a discontinued sauce, for what that's worth, so that's probably why it's hard to find.
Oh, that could be. That could be.
All right, we got to get you to each the Hot Ones Season 27 10-pack.
They had a bunch of Hot Ones sauces at the show. You can just
do shots of the sauce in order.
Oh, God.
And no, see who quits first. And that'll be a segment who's going on to quit. The show.
No, we know who's going to quit first. You hear? Do you hear what she just said? We know who's going to quit first. It's just a matter of me finding out what my higher sauces heat levels are called. Because I know Ghost Train is hotter than Scorn Woman, but I don't know how much hotter. I just know it's hot.
Here we go. There's the list. Let's see here.
And also Pink Hippo, whatever the fuck.
Ten pack. There we go. I'm looking it up right now. I want to see how high these go.
The Last Dab Experience. 2,693,000 Scoville.
What's the Scoville unit of the bomb?
135,000.
Okay, I've had some of that at VGM Con, and that does burn. We put it on cheese balls.
See, I might be able to reach up to the Los Calientes Rojo. I might be able to get that one down. Anything after that would be very questionable.
This might be it. I hate that I'm using AI for it, but it's what showed up. So
no. I'll do it.
It's just the first response at the top of the screen. Let's see. All right, so Tylenol, what? So I'm going to read it anyway. This is the time I'm doing it because I'm lazy right now. Several online retailers and spicy food enthusiasts describe Ghost Train hot sauces containing Buchalokia peppers. Buchalokias have a Scoville around 1 million. Based on this information, Ghost Train hot sauce likely has a Scoville rating in the range of 855,000 to 1,041,427, which is typically in the range of the pepper.
Yeah, that would probably make me very sick if I ate that.
Because it's brutal fucking sauce. It's not a joke sauce.
Not so much because it's brutal, but because I have a tendency to put a lot of hot sauce and stuff, and regardless of how hot
it is. That doesn't change the fact that it makes it brutal. I put a whole lot of Franks on my shit. It doesn't make me want to throw up.
Two bottles of the Last Dab shipped is like $50.
Jesus Christ.
Ship one to Aki, ship one to Purnell.
And you how about shipping me a hot sauce that actually fucking tastes good? How about that?
No.
Oh, I'm sure it tastes great. The hotter it is, the better it usually tastes, but you just have to get it past the burn.
No, that is a lie.
Go ahead.
No, we're going to say it.
Okay, I was just going to say, I know that there's that one sauce in the Hot Ones pack that everybody says is just awful tasting. It's like somewhere in the middle of like
what was it called?
The heat.
Do you know?
I'm going to try and find out. I'll interrupt again.
Because a lot of booths at that place were selling you advertising themselves like as seen on Hot Ones season blank, as seen on Hot Ones. And then a couple booths were like, as seen on Hot Ones, and there was like 15 seasons, different seasons. Like, we were on all these seasons because they love our shit. So,
if it was the pickled garlic sriracha, I wouldn't be shocked because that sounds kind of horrific.
I don't think I had a pickled garlic sriracha, though there was a booth that sold like spiced
2.6 million.
That's
to both of you.
Oh, Jesus. I don't know if I can eat that. Holy fuck.
You'll ship it. It'll show up. It'll end up in the trash, and it'll be wasting money.
91% Pepper X, the hottest pepper in the world.
Jesus Christ, that might kill me. I'll do it, though. I'll do it on here even. I don't care.
Do it for the lulz, I guess.
Oh, it ain't gonna be the lulz. It's gonna be fucking horrific.
I mean, people get off
on 11 shit. Out of 10. Fuck my life.
People get off on some weird shit. It'll be entertaining to somebody.
This is gonna hurt.
This might be worth paying to get Aki to do on the show during
a Aki review. Yeah, Aki would do it. Send it to her. That would be fun. You should do that. Because if she's willing to do it, I want to see it or hear it. So
I'll definitely do it. I'm not going to like it, and I may never talk to you afterwards, but I will.
How are you going to not talk to him again when you agreed to do it? You're agreeing to it. It's not his fault.
He put the idea in my head. It is 100% his fault.
You made me suffer by mailing me the sauce, having me sign for the sauce, having me open the package, unwrap it, and then put it on a cracker and eat it.
Cracker? No, I'll put this on tacos. I'll make a taco with this shit on there.
I think it was the bomb.
Yeah, the bomb that's the one. That's the one.
I think that's the one Ale Sean makes everyone taste.
That's what I'm talking about. It's the one at VGMCon. I always stumble into their panel, and he's like, hey, we're... my Ale Sean. What's his face? My friend Austin will be like, hey, we're doing the thing. And Pernell showed up almost like clockwork. You want to do it? I'm like, yeah, I want to do it.
I think I just figured out why that one doesn't taste particularly good. It has mint and cilantro, and a lot of people have a genetic predisposition to not liking the taste of cilantro. And
I
mint
am not
just...
that guy. It's just hurts anyway. Ugh. I mean, it all tastes like fire to me at that point. So I was like, man, like the one booth was selling, like, hey, guys, this one is one of our favorites. It has chocolate. And he named all these things. Yeah, I put them up. I was like, it just tastes like hot. He's like, yeah, but the chocolate creeps in on the back. Like, it tastes like hot.
Yeah, the thing about cilantro, though, is the people who are genetically predispositioned to not like it, it tastes like soap.
Yeah, I did hear about that. And those poor people, just like pineapple, can taste like metal sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever eaten a chunk of cilantro to know if I like it or not.
You might want to try that before you ruin your taste buds with hot stuff.
Yeah, I'm just good.
The cilantro. But I'm assuming that you guys on this show eat pineapple without it tasting like metal.
I don't eat pineapple. I don't like pineapple.
What about you two?
I don't chunked pineapple, but I like pineapple flavored stuff.
Oh, I love pineapple.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the flavor stuff. It has to be the actual fruit. But so in your case, Chris, since you said you've eaten the fruit, have you ever had it come out tasting like metal?
Yes. I think you're that's the bromelain, right? Something like that.
I think so. I just know that it's happened to me a couple of times, which made me look it up. And I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah, it's because when you eat a pineapple, it's also eating you. Because it's a... bromelain is an enzyme that breaks down proteins. So what you're kind of tasting is your tongue being destructed.
Yeah, it's literally melting your tongue.
Yeah. That's wild. We humans eat some crazy shit.
Yeah.
But we love it.
Yes, we do.
I mean, sometimes we love it. Sometimes we're just stupid.
You can the crap of your tongue. Oh, yeah. Very stupid. There ain't a lie there.
I mean, you know, if you don't eat too much of it, then, you know, it's fine. Your body will recover. It's, you know, you just get like a bit of irritation.
But eating too much of something is what we do best.
I was going to say, yeah, ultimately, we're a much more efficient eating machine than the pineapple.
So, just a little bit.
That's very true.
You know,
not but mooch.
It's one of those things where it's like if you put your, you know, the putting a tooth in a cup of Coke and dissolving it or whatever, it's like, well, yeah, but when you're drinking it, it doesn't take all day. So, you know, you're not just sitting there with it, like, you know, with your teeth sitting in the soda for like, you know, 24 hours or whatever.
You don't take a sip and then just like swish it through your teeth for like 3 hours?
Not even for 3 minutes after seeing that freaking video.
Yeah, I was going to say 30 minutes tops.
I have a limit.
Yeah, that thing ruined me for that shit. Like, no dice. I do mean no dice.
Yeah, no, pineapples are delicious. I actually, I do have a friend that will eat them until it actually like hurts and like in a debilitating way. So some folks get a little too into the pineapple, I think.
They do pineapple Mountain Dew a lot. Like during the Baja flavors, they do a lot of pineapple. Then the one at Dollar General is pineapple.
Yeah, I can't. I don't think I can really do pineapple flavor as much as the actual fruit. But they're, lest we forget, they Big Red had a big pineapple drink. Yeah, you don't see it very often. You know, you see sometimes Big Blue, which is not the F-Zero track, but but an actual blue soda that's related to Big Red. Yeah, a big pineapple is one that you very rarely see. It looks like you can actually buy it.
Oh.
So yeah, it doesn't look like it's extinct.
Dr. Pepper Vanilla Float. That shit's impossible to actually find in a store.
Oh yeah.
Maybe you could find it in your area, but
yeah, I was gonna say I don't think I've had any problems when I've tried, but I haven't tried in a while, so.
Yeah. I've been enjoying the new Dragon Fruit Mountain Dew. Have you tried that one?
Oh, yeah. Is that?
No, I haven't seen it. I'm going to assume as you're about to tell me it's a Walmart exclusive, which would explain everything.
It is.
How is it?
It's good. I'm enjoying it. I like the colors on the can, too.
I don't think I've had any unusual sodas lately.
I'm going to have to darken their doorstep one of these days and just to try out the soda.
Hmm.
And then there's a Honeydew Mountain Dew. It was in Canada like 2 years ago, and they finally brought it to America. And it is exclusive to Maverick and Come and Go gas stations.
No.
Which are like things West Coast only.
See, why don't they do these things where they're like, okay, we can make these exclusive to locations within regions. That way, regions that don't have the stupid store can get it too.
I mean, you got Kroger around that you, don't you?
That would require an IQ point of temperature.
You don't have any Krogers around you?
Nope. No Krogers.
Hmm.
That sounds like
I know where Kroger is.
Kroger's a grocery store, Southern. They're the ones who have Purple Thunder.
From Down Under?
Purple Thunder from Down Under.
That one's like a plum flavored.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
It's pretty
good. I like it.
I hate plums.
Little Caesars had a mango rush.
Hmm.
A fun one. Like Speedway and 7-Eleven have Infinite Swirl, which is a raspberry pineapple.
That company definitely nailed the whole assignment of having flavored beverages.
Yeah.
I mean, I like those two flavors and potentially together, but infinite swirl.
How infinite is it?
Yeah.
Goddamn infinite.
Infinitum.
Do you have Casey's around you?
Not me.
What is that?
There you go.
That answers that. None of us know what it is except for you.
I thought you had them around you, Aki. I thought we talked about this one before because they have Overdrive in their stores, KC General Stores.
If we did, it was probably like 100 miles of me, and I don't remember it.
Hmm.
I assume it's K-A-S-E-Y. S?
No, C-A-S-E-Y.
Oh.
M-O-U-S-E.
That was close.
Yeah. Walmart had Frostbite. Kroger used to have Thrashed Apple. Food Lion had Uproar. That was a really good one, Uproar.
What?
Okay, so.
That was Strawberry Kiwi.
Oh, that sounds fucking delicious. Holy shit. It
was so good.
I love strawberry kiwi things.
I think me and Ian were coming back from Agfest. I was like, dude, there's a Food Lion like 10 minutes from here. Can we stop there and see if they have this stuff? I bought 11 2 liters.
Wow.
Damn. Jesus.
Well, I mean, I get it if you're going to drink them over a long period of time.
That's the only way you could get them was 2 liters, too.
Hmm.
Yeah. Dumb. Yeah, but whatever. It.
Whatever. Delectable. Delectable.
I tried to use the locator to find a Casey's location anywhere near me, and it was just like, no. Oh, that's so funny. The only one that exists in all of Texas is like less than 10 miles away from where I grew up.
Nice.
Which is like 3 hours away from where I am now, but still. Yeah, it's a Granbury, Texas. And then, yeah, what I have near me is Casey's New Orleans Snowballs, which is a boozy shaved ice truck that's down the street.
Yeah.
And then Casey's.
Yeah, boozy, like so that. It's good.
Huh?
Closest to me is Illinois, or in Ohio. The closest one.
I have three in my state. But they're not close. They're probably closer than the rest of y'all's, but they're not close. They're not close enough that I can convince them.
Charlestown or New Salisbury?
A distance.
This says they're 15 miles from you.
Although we're all just doxing ourselves.
Yeah.
We do it all the time.
My address is 330. No. whatever. Should we talk games? We got shit we got to review.
Oh, it's a video game podcast. I see how it is.
Yeah, I figure we talked enough about friggin' hot sauce and Mountain Dew.
A deadly combination.
Hot and Dew.
Did you try the Flamin' Hot Mountain Dew or no?
No. Oh.
Years ago, I did. That's the one where it's pretty much like lime. It's like a spicy lime, isn't it?
I thought it had more of like a cinnamon flavor to it.
I think it did taste more like cinnamon, but that was the description that it had, was that it was like a spicy lime.
Hmm.
It's been a minute, but I did have it a few years back when it was like the new thing. I actually just had Flaming Hot Marshmallow Rice Krispie Treats, and that was not good.
What? Hmm. What was that one?
Flaming Hot Rice Krispies. Like, basically, Flaming Hot Cheeto Marshmallow Treats.
Why?
Someone made them and prepared them and brought them to a freaking barbecue.
That sounds evil.
Well, I'm not sure if they intended for it to be evil or if their taste buds are very damaged. Probably from all the hot sauces they might eat. I don't know.
They meant it to be evil.
Yeah, like turkey soda.
I did not consume it. The funny part is, it's hard to even call it evil. You try it, you go, this isn't very good, and then you throw away all their food. So it's like, if anything, they wasted their time and their money. So I was like, yeah.
Yeah, they may be wasting time and money, but then you're wasting food, and that's just shameful. Be ashamed.
No, I'm not wasting food. They wasted it to prepare a disgusting item. Make food you want that people want to eat. Otherwise, you're the one wasting the food, not the person who won't eat the food.
You threw it away.
I'm fine with that. They threw it away when they mixed it with trash.
I miss Mountain Dew Major Melon.
That I was miss Major one. Melons, too.
I have one can left.
Drink that bitch. And be out.
Saving it for a special occasion.
Like when you want internal stomach rot. Because that's how old it's going to be when you finally drink it.
There's people who like crack open like pitch black 2 cans from like 25 years ago. There are insane collectors out there. It is ridiculous. I don't know why they do it. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they can stomach a drink that's multiple years old.
Probably for the cherry rush.
Mountain Dew, if stored properly and obviously unopened, can last up to about 12 years. But for most people, it's about 2 to 3 days after the expiration date. And after that, you should throw it away. But if it's held in the correct way,
cans up to 2 to 3 days after expiration? No. Maybe if it's opened, but a sealed can, no.
Voodoo from like 2020
Those taste great. a year, 2 years after they, quote, expire. It's just best by date with those. They don't actually expire. The syrup will just separate from the seltzer water. Yeah, it's weird. Hydrate. Yay. Dragon fruit.
Hydrate. Drink yourself your syrup and then all the seltzer water afterwards.
All right. Should we talk games?
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes, maybe. No, maybe so.
I'm cool with it.
In some countries.
All right. Patent first formal. Game to talk about tonight is Patapon 1 and 2 Replay, developed by SAS Company, published by Bandai Namco, licensed from Sony, released July 10th on PS4, PS5, Switch, and PC for $29.99. Patapon is an action-adventure where players use the rhythm of four mystical drums to command cute and mysterious eyeball-like creatures known as Patapon. As the player, you are the god of the Patapon and lead them on a grand adventure to Earthend. Pernell, what is going on in Patapon 1 and 2 Replay?
Okay, there's a lot of game here, so I'm going to give you the full shot. I played most of the first game. Dip my toe in the second and said, I'm not staying here too long because I want to continue with the first game before doing more with the second. But I did get a grasp on what the second provides that the first didn't have, enough to already know that I think this game is already fantastic. Doesn't hurt that I own all of them and never played them until now. But that's another story for another day.
Thank God re-releases come out so that we could like bump those games back from our backlog.
Especially when they're released, the originals are released on systems that have exploding batteries and crap. So,
seriously,
essentially, like PSP, dang near every game for that thing needs to get remade or dumped somewhere that doesn't care about the hardware. ROMs, I guess some people do, but if you're not into that and you want to, you know, pay a company money, we need these remakes done. So, thankfully, that's what this game did, and I think they did a good job with it. In this game, you control a series of, I guess. Yeah, you technically do. You control a series of little Patapon warriors as they traverse the landscape, a variety of different landscapes, in fact, to make their way to Earthend. They travel across a map, each one having, with the map having a multitude of levels that you stop at on the way. And the gameplay for this involves you doing a series of steps. The first step being to load out your Patapon army with sections of types of Patapon. So as you play the game, you'll unlock additional types of Patapon that you can set up in your army. But for the most part, you have melee units and you have range units of various types. And they can equip weapons that or armor that will buff up their stats. You put them in the spaces that are most conducive to them in the army, front, middle, or back. And that will be where they're positioned when the actual combat and the marching takes place. After you set those guys up, you'll go onto an actual level, and then you are tasked with, you know, controlling your army and progressing to the level. Controlling the army in this game doesn't work like you might expect in a number of other games. Instead, this is best described as a strategy rhythm game, because you will input a series of commands to form a rhythm using the face buttons on your controller. So there's a constant pervading beat that goes over in the background. And once you get a hold of that beat, you'll input buttons for it. So, for example, you'll want to move forward. The way you'll advance forward is by tapping left, 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 right, in that exact order and in that exact rhythm. So you don't just go right, left, right, because you'll fail. It has to be the rhythm I just stated. Once you've done that, the Patapon will then sing the rhythm, and they'll do the command. So you also have to wait until they're done singing. So it's essentially skipping a four beat before putting in another command. I guess that's the game's way of saying, give you time to decide on what your next action will be, seeing how the battle state takes place. So you'll have to advance. They'll advance one frame up the screen. Watch and repeat until something comes along. It could be a monster, for example. In fact, lots of the times it will be a monster. At that point, you might want to input a different type of command, such as how to attack an enemy. And then that command might be right, right, left, right. And once you've done that, boom, the next phase will be them singing and murdering cattle. At which point, you'll continue to do so until either the opponent is dead or the opponent runs away, which means you'll have to give chase, or the opponent's going to attack, which means you need to defend. or any number of things that might take place that will make you decide it's time to change strategy or pursue the consistent strategy. When enemies die, they will drop items that can be used back at camp for a variety of things also, such as to equip on your army that can represent miracles that may come into play on future levels where you can input the command after doing enough perfect rhythm commands in sequence, which generates the fever gauge. And once fever is up, this command can then be put in to do additional activities. You'll get equipment that can be equipped on the individual Patapons to raise their stats, so they'll continue to grow, and you'll pretty much be engaging in things like that. I also kind of like that the game has this little interesting element where sometimes you'll be on a level and you might see an item that the game does not explain to you at all, but you are intended to kind of get a grasp on seeing it and going, that means something. I should try to interact with it in some way. And it may be by inputting a certain miracle command or by inputting an attack command at the right spot or just a random rhythm that comes to mind based on context clues, thereby triggering results, which is pretty nice. It ends up being a lot of fun to do. And I enjoy hearing and listening to the Patapons as they sing over whatever music in the level you're playing at the time, because the music itself is fairly subtle. You don't have a full orchestrated OST going here or nothing. But every area does have a different sort of backbeat rhythm. And then when you input the Patapons songs, they'll sing along to that rhythm, which in turn makes for a unique song for that particular area of the game. I think the thing that makes this game particularly compelling in the sense, too, as a, of a type of game that this is that early on you might be playing it and thinking, ah, I'm just, you know, marching and stabbing and marching and stabbing. What the freaking do? But it's largely the boss encounters that will really make you figure out, see what this game is truly all about, because bosses are damage sponges that have their own personalized patterns and behaviors. And if you can't read what they're doing and in turn input your commands to react to that, you're going to be in for a world of trouble. Also doesn't help that your Patapon individually can, in fact, die. And if a Patapon dies, they will drop their hat on the board. If your army is unable to pick that hat up at before the end of the level, that character stays dead, and you have to create a new Patapon and have him start from scratch. So if you like little, you know, Blinky McGee, don't screw up, or at least be prepared to rescue him with your army in the event that he takes a beating and goes down hard. But therein lies the rub of the game. I enjoy playing it. I enjoy just kind of the experience behind it. It's captivating in that sense. And what I came to understand, because again, I didn't get to the second one deep down because I want to finish the first one first. This is one of those times where I'm like, why would I want to start the clearly better game? Knowing that once I do that, why would I go back to the inferior product when I can experience the inferior product, which is still good, and then play the game that overshadows it? I can't understand that the second game offers more upgrade features for your Patapon, and they introduce new Patapon types such as heroes, which are sort of like clan leaders. So they bring their own perks to the game. And though I would have never gotten to this, apparently it also engages a deeper meta game for the post. So there's more to do when you complete the game proper there. So they backloaded it. But I can't imagine the second game, from what I've been reading, being worse than the first game, which I've been clearly enjoying very much. So if anything, I look forward to seeing more of what's to come in this game. As it stands, though, I think Patapon is worth your money and time. And I love the fact that, for the record, I like the fact that they modernized it in a sense that it's on multiple consoles, and they transferred the translate the buttons so that you don't need to know you don't need to know what the face buttons are for your particular unit. Like the original game, and you can tell because the drums you acquired during the game to do the commands list the original PlayStation face buttons on them as part of the art. But when the game's explaining how to play it and whatnot, they associate it with up, down, left, and right. So it's very good that they did that. And it shows that that's like one small example of them proving that this was like a remake that they wanted to do and give credence to the fact that people won't be playing it necessarily on a PlayStation machine. So I do appreciate them for that. And then, of course, keep in mind, though, just because they did that doesn't mean you don't need to understand what the buttons represent, like don, pon, you know, pata, because certain commands, when they teach you to do them to activate the miracles, don't refer to up, down, left, right. They refer to the sounds they make and the wording of the sound, the onomatopoeia of the sound they make. So better get used to hitting poom doom pata puta, because if you don't, well, you're going to suffer a little bit. But as it stands, though, I think this game is very, very good. I think it stands the test of time, and to be quite frank, for all the rhythm games and such that I've played over the years, this still feels very unique to that type of game. It stands out on its own.
All right. Well, it clocks in on everything but Xbox for $29.99. What do you think?
An easy recommendation. I'd say it's a buy.
Very good. And hey, Sony and Namco, if you're listening, we're getting Helldivers. Why don't you throw these our way too? Like, Sony, you're not even publishing these. Namco is. Hook us up.
Oh, hey.
Especially Everybody's Golf. Like, what the fuck? Come on. Give us that one.
Golf was a platform-specific game. Is that not the case anymore?
No, the new one coming out is on PC and Switch. Just like this.
Oh.
Well, and Freedom Wars, when that came out.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Freedom Wars Remastered.
Yeah. Sony properties that Bandai Namco is licensing to release multi-platform, but Sony doesn't like Xbox still. So maybe Helldivers will change their mind.
Fingers crossed.
Anyway, next up, Beat 'em Up Collection, developed and published by Cubite Interactive, released July 17th. Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $19.99. Beat 'em Up Collection from Cubite Classics brings together 7 retro side-scrolling brawlers in one action-packed bundle. First Samurai, Second Samurai, Gourmet Warriors, Iron Commando, Legend, Sword of Sodan, and the Tale of Clouds and Winds. Fight through time and fantasy worlds in pure 16-bit style, now enhanced with modern features like rewind, cheats, screen filters, digital manuals, and full localization. A must-play for fans of classic beat-em-ups. Chris, I hear you're a fan of classic beat-em-ups. What do you think of this one?
I like them okay. you got the wrong person for the job.
I'm into anime games. I don't know what to...
Yeah, all I play is, yeah. I just play, what is it? damn it.
Madden and visual novels.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that Golden Tee, whatever, those golf games at the bar. That's all I play. Okay, so yeah, this is a collection of largely early to mid 90s beat 'em ups on the obscure side, which is, of course, what we would expect from Cubite, because they do tend to dig deep. They go for the hidden gems. And what hidden gems they brought for us. Okay, so a few of these are going to be a little bit, like, I would say up to 3 of these are going to be recognizable to people who really got into, like, the 16-bit era. The rest are going to be a little more obscure for reasons we'll get into. So I'll just do a brief overview of the games, and then we'll just talk about the features in the collection. We don't need to spend too much time on any one of them. They are beat-em-up games. At the end of the day, that is what you are getting with any of these is, you know, somebody walking along a belt and then beating up people as they come by. So having said, the first game is First Samurai. This one actually came out on the Super Nintendo. You may recognize its samurai from the cover art. Really cool art. Had a cool sword. And yeah, this one is probably the most, I would have to say this might be the most popular. No, maybe Sword of Sodan, but anyways. But yeah, like I said, this is basically an Amiga game originally. It came out in 91. And the SNES version came out a couple of years later when, you know, back kind of in the middle of the Super Nintendo's lifespan, released, published by Kemco, actually, back then. And, you know, came out a couple other times. And then, yeah, this is basically the one that's, I would say, the least beat-em-up-like of the set. It has kind of puzzle elements to it. You have to figure out what to pick up and who to defeat to get past certain barriers. You also have a bit of a magic, you have a magic bell that you collect. You collect several of them, but they will help you in context-specific ways depending on what obstacle you have. So you kind of have to figure out a few things with this one. You can't just blindly proceed, which is pretty cool. But yeah, largely it is that you're, you know, a samurai guy. You got a sword. You're, you know, slashing up enemies. Good times all around. Like I said, it's a little bit more puzzly. And like I said, this is one that we did get in the U.S. However, the second one, suitably called Second Samurai, which I would have dared them to call it First Samurai 2, but in fact, they did
another
the right thing.
First Samurai.
Another First Samurai. So Second First Samurai is also an Amiga game that was that came out, you know, a couple of years after the first one, of course, and it got ported to the Mega Drive, I believe in Europe, by Psygnosis, who, you know, they're well known publisher of the time, both here and there, but especially in Europe, and especially like Amiga stuff. Most Amiga conversions would be that we know of are handled by Psygnosis. But yeah, it wasn't. I don't know, actually. It might have been released on the Genesis, but it is a. It's an obscure one, for sure. So this one I really like because this is. It's a little bit like the first one in that it does feature some puzzle solving a little bit, and it also. You know, it's a you're a samurai guy, or you can be a samurai girl, or both at the same time. It's got 2-player co-op, unlike the first game. And you kind of samurai through time, as it were. And of course, like any time-based video game, the first stage that you start off in is caveman times. And the way that they handle bat combat in this game is that, you know, you can slash, you can throw enemies, you can pick up sub weapons, especially knives that you can throw as a projectile. You can fight, you can actually attack in a few different directions depending on the weapon. Like you can throw a knife straight up in the air, although I don't recommend you do that, especially not in real life. And the thing is that the enemies all explode. And so what I love about this game is that you start the game throwing cavemen who then explode. And they also, there's straight up apes that come at you, and you can throw them and they will explode. And I mean fiery explosion, like a grenade. It's the most badass thing I've ever seen. I have no notes.
Is that why the game is rated M?
I mean, it's not, I didn't see anything gory. It's more like video game explosion, right? Like Ninja Gaiden style, like original Ninja Gaiden style, but with actual fire.
Yeah, I'm like legit confused because it's rated M for blood and gore and violence.
Like, maybe there is some what? Later. I don't know. I don't know that I made it far enough in it to really tell. All I needed to see was a caveman exploding after I threw him, and then like throwing an ape into a caveman and having them both explode. And I was like, okay, well, I don't need to say anything about this one. This is perfect. This is already selling the whole thing, the whole collection for me here. So, but I must persist. It is my duty. So the next is Gourmet Warriors, which Cubite has actually released a la carte before, and it was a Japan only beat 'em up on the Super Famicom. It's definitely like it's a weirder one, but really, you know. It, like I said, it's a good beat 'em up. It's pretty clever. It's got weird hidden content in it, like fighting like as the minor baddies. If you select a certain part of like the menu or something like that, really all you got to know is Mademoiselle. I will reiterate, and we can move on from that one. Like I said, I've reviewed this one in its full glory in a previous episode, and it's not. I would say that it's a good game, but it's not the standout of this collection. So,
yeah.
But I am glad it's there. Like I said, it's nice of Cubite to include it on a collection, even though they're selling it separately too. So yeah, we got Iron Commando, which is an interesting one because apparently it was canceled. Like, it was canceled when it was developed and was going to be released in Europe, but then it got released, it actually got translated to Japanese and then released in Japan in the same year. And then it was, like, then they, you know, it kind of languished that way until it was re-released in 2017, or I guess initially released for like Super Nintendo as part of a, you know, modern Super Nintendo kind of game. And, you know, it's also on Evercade and things like that. So like it's making the rounds now, but it was, but yeah, this one was actually developed by Arcade Zone, which is a French studio. And that I think that's not the standout, but like that's a, an interesting, like, you know, obscure developer there, which we'll hear about pretty soon. But yeah, this one is pretty interesting because it is a Iron Commando is a little bit of a of an Arnold beat 'em up, like, you know, it's not it isn't actually like using anything from the film Commando, but you are an army guy, and on top of punching and, you know, beating up with bats and, you know, stabbing like you would in a typical Final Fight fashion, you can also pick up guns off the ground and just shoot people if you want. It's a little more in that way reminiscent of something like Growl Runark or, you know, something like that. So it's actually got a little bit of a different element to it. It kind of runs a little slow. And actually, it will remind you of another game I'm just about to talk about because it was the same developer. But the thing that I liked about this one is that the first boss, when you're walking by, like, you know, it's belt action, right? So it's only like one kind of lane that you move up and down in and, you know, beat up people while you're moving from left to right. And that's how these games usually work. The first boss is called Truck, and it is a truck that comes up and runs over you. Once you get up, like, it's it comes from off camera from the bottom of the screen to the top of the screen. And so it's just the front of a truck, and that's what you're fighting. So you have to beat up Truck while you're also facing off, you know, against the enemies that also pop into the screen. But I love that as a first boss fight. Yeah, this one kind of rules, actually. But yeah, the same developer, I believe, yeah, Arcade Zone, actually made another game, and that is Legend. So Legend is like Iron Commando, except in high fantasy, and Legend did come out on the Super Nintendo. I actually used to have a friend who was very proud of owning a Super Nintendo copy of this game. It's not the most expensive game in the world, but it is really hard to come across a legit copy of this thing. But yeah, it's the same kind of slow moving. There's like no run button, and your character has to move across a lot of screen to like make it scroll. So you really are kind of a lumbering, hulking, like Conan the Barbarian of a dude as you go through this one. And yeah, like I said, it's just, you know, you straight up have a sword. You can also command, you know, magic, and, you know, you just beat up knights and stuff that are bigger than you. It doesn't have a car running you over as a first boss. It's a big old knight on a bridge, but you know, still it's a good one. And like I said, it's like the only other, well, not the only other one, but it's like the other one that I think some fans of like obscure beat 'em ups will recognize. So I like that about it. Also got a pretty good, it's got a pretty good soundtrack, but the title theme of it sounds like it's ripping off ActRaiser, the town theme from ActRaiser. It's like it starts off with the exact same notes. It's like it's weird, but I'm not accusing them of anything. I get it, French, but I always found that to be really interesting because I actually have played this game before. I played it many years ago. So yeah, so that's Legend. And then we have this one that's really interesting is Water Margin, the Tales of Cloud and Wind. And that's not Water Margarine. That's Water Margin for some reason. So this one was developed by Never Ending Soft. And then this is one of those kind of games that kind of started off as like essentially it's basically an unlicensed Mega Drive game. that got released like a couple of different times, and it's a little cloudy. They, you know, straight up have said in the description that it was developed illegally, quote unquote. I don't know what that means, but I like it. This is actually maybe the runaway favorite for me. It moves really fast, which is what I like. You got your three characters. I like to play as the girl, because I like female characters. Also, I just like that they're fast. I like fast characters. But yeah, you just like basically, you know, you run through and you know, beat up enemies with your sword, and it's kind of a little more like King of the Dragons or something like that. Slightly smaller sprites, really nice colors, and like really nice sprite design. And you know, you actually attack much faster. You're taking on a few more enemies in the screen. And you can collect magic spells that that will be screen clearing like things, kind of like Golden Axe or the Golden Axe series. That you just hold down like the special attack button to, you know, and then it'll have you select one, and then you can select them and then use them. And they drop those at a good enough tick that like it's actually a pretty viable strategy to use. And but yeah, really, really excellent. But yeah, illegal. So don't play this game. It is a crime. The police will be called. And then finally we have Sword of Sodan or Sodan, whatever. This one, I very crystal clear remember this one from going to, in like, you know, I would say about 1991 or so, going to the mom and pop rental store and seeing that they had this Sword of Sodan. And, you know, I picked up any game that had a sword in, a guy with a sword on the cover. You know, that was, I knew that would be a good time because I was just discovering RPGs at the time and like things like that. And this particular one, when I looked on the back, it had these big, huge, giant sprites, which was really cool. But one of the screenshots showed one of the bad guys getting decapitated, like full on bloody head rolling on the ground, like kind of stuff. And it had the little quip, heads will roll.
God.
And this is a full year at least before Mortal Kombat. So it was like, it was visceral and gory in like a way that was shocking to tiny me. So I was very interested in it. And then I actually didn't play it. I never rented it. And then I ended up playing a copy a long time later. And I was like, this isn't all that good, actually. But because it moves very slow. Like I said, it is a Amiga port. This one was actually published by Electronic Arts back when they were a video game a video game people. No, I'm just kidding. Womp. But yeah, womp womp. Yeah, one of those what they did a lot of publishing for Genesis back then and stuff. But yeah, it's not the best one. It is an interesting one because you have you have a brother and sister to select from. Both of them are barbarians. Their names are Brodan and Shardan. And yeah. So Sodan is their dad, and his sword is the titular sword. And yeah, you just go out, and it's strictly 2D. Like, you don't move up and down on the planes, you just side scroll. And you just try and attack enemies without getting killed, and it's very frustrating sometimes. But hey, it is a classic for better or worse. But speaking of difficulty, so this being a Cubite collection has just about any kind of options that you want. It has like just a ton of stuff that you can do. So you have in the main menu, which shows a big wall of televisions, like different kinds of televisions, like playing scenes from the games and stuff. It looks really cool. Like you're I don't know, just one of those like big but completely impractical like video wall setups that you would see in like movies or, you know, a commercial or something like that. Very cool. But yeah, from that menu you can access you know, like an options menu that gives you the screen mode where you can like move the screen to like, you know, fit full screen 4:3. You can make things pixel perfect. You can Choose your backgrounds, which they have backgrounds for each of the games and also some generic backgrounds, and you can actually randomize them. So if you want to see Second Samurai characters in your Sword of Sodan playthrough, then that is your freedom. Of course, you have a whole bunch of different scanline options, none of which you need. Just set it on pixel perfect, you heathen. No, I'm just kidding. But it does have some pretty goofy like scanline options, and I always appreciate the amount that they put in there of like just tweaking it a little bit, and that's just like this whole other profile. It does have an achievements list, so you have a bunch of achievements you can do within the game. You also can look at custom instruction manuals for every game, where it tells you like in the game, in not like the original instruction manual, but I'll get to that. But like it gives you like instructions on how to play everything, because it's not always just beating up with a sword. It just 90% is. And then each of the games, there's an extra section where you can actually access options for each of the games, where you can look at a section called Curiosities, which actually tells you the it tells you the release history, the in-game story, describes the gameplay, which is interesting, and it also gives you little trivia notes as well for each and every one. That's actually the reason why I know some of the release stuff on this, because I've been cheating this whole time. But yeah, you can actually learn all about these games from within the game, which is always like a thing I really enjoy. You can also access a gallery, which will show you like all the box art and actual full scans of the instruction books, if such a thing is available. One of them, in fact, Second Samurai, even has what looks like pictures from somebody's like eBay sales page, just like photos of like parts of the game and stuff, like the cartridge and the instruction manual and things, which I'm like, I like that. It's a nice homemade touch. And then finally, within the games, once you get them started up, you have other options for cheating and things like that. If you really want to do that, you can also remap the controls for everything. Each of them also has a rewind feature. And the other thing is, yeah, you know, you got like all these options. Like I said, the emulation, of course, it's great on them. No complaints, no notes there. The only thing I will say is that at least on the Switch 2, I didn't have time to test it on the Switch 1. I doubt it has any issues on Switch 1, but on Switch 2, if you linger on the menu, it will eventually freeze. And I mean like about 30 seconds to 1 minute, and then you have to close the game and reopen it. It also sometimes crashes from the menu. I didn't have any problems with any of the games, but the menus themselves do not play well on my Switch 2, so I'm hoping that gets fixed, but we'll see.
Yes, the store page just says supported game behavior is consistent with Switch, so I'll have to take a look at that. But the collection comes in at $20. What do you think of it?
Well, I mean, considering that's like 1/5 of the price of a cartridge of Legend, you know, that's a pretty good deal. This is 7 quality beat-em-ups, and, well, 6 quality beat-em-ups in Sword of Sodan for, you know, $20. I mean, that's hard to complain. I'm picking on it now. No, these games are actually really great and worth checking out. Like I said, if you like Gourmet Warriors, if you happen to play that one like by itself, then these are all, I think, as good, if not better. Like I said, some of them will have a little bit of that European Amiga type of jank, but you know, that's they're not like Capcom beat 'em ups where everything is like an arcade conversion that, you know, used to be silky smooth. It's like usually these are like an upgrade from a computer that would run at a certain tick, you know? So, but I really, really like these games. I love the personality of them. I love the obscurity of them. I love the menu stuff that you get with them, that you can learn about them while you're also playing them. Plenty of features to, you know, keep you playing at any skill level. Yeah, it's a great collection. I say go ahead and pick it up.
Cool. All right, next up, Neon Abyss 2, developed by Vivo Games, published by Vivo Games and Kepler Ghost, released June 17th on Steam Early Access for $19.99. Dive into the cyber myth roguelike chaos of Neon Abyss 2. Now featuring 4-player online co-op, more combat styles, and unlimited item synergies, every run delivers a dramatic action-packed experience you won't forget. Aki and Pernell, both of you played this. Aki, start us off. What is Neon Abyss 2?
Okay, in this, you are taking on the gods. They are all based as computer stuff and on EDM-styled stuff. So cool! It has recently added the multiplayer component to which when you actually go into multiplayer,
I'm getting rated.
Nice. Hey, Bray.
I love that sound so much. Welcome in, Bree and Raiders. How's everyone doing tonight? What?
That threw me off. I was like, I don't know why adding multiplayer is so funny, but whatever.
I warned you.
I don't even know if they heard that.
Comes out of nowhere. Oh my god, I love that sound. Oh, okay, so funny to just get hit out of nowhere. Okay.
I have no idea what the last thing they heard was before that sound started going off.
I don't know either. But
I'm just going to say they recently added co-op to it. And when you go into the co-op section, it tells you, oh, yeah, this doesn't necessarily work well. So keep that in mind. It could break things. Things may not work. We have no real idea how it's going to run for you. So user beware. So I actually didn't fiddle with that personally. So, you get to pick your character, you unlock more as you play and do different tasks in the game. I think I have 5 out of the first 6 of them, and it seems like maybe there might be more to unlock, or maybe that's a future thing, I'm not sure. Because the first whole handful of them, you can read their descriptions and see what they look like and stuff, but they're just grayed out if you can't use them. However, after all of them, there's a few of them that are just question marks. I don't know if those are ones that you can unlock yet or not. I have no idea.
Could be something that comes eventually, given that they are in early access.
That's what I'm thinking.
They plan to be in early access into 2026. They don't have a specific end date in sight or planned, but they'll take it as it comes, I guess.
Yeah, fair. There are, you go jump into a level and you go through a handful of stages. There's a little mini boss at the end of each stage. After 3 to 6 stages, there's the main god that you have to beat. Good luck. You're going to die a bunch of times before that happens. Every time you die, you get a certain amount of evolve points. You would think, oh, it evolves your character, it makes it a lot easier. You would be wrong, because I don't know why they didn't do that. Instead, you use those evolve points to level up your character in a completely different way than increase your stats to make surviving easier. Instead, it's like, oh yeah, this type of room will show up often in stages. And it's like, that doesn't mean I can take more hits, though. I need to take more hits, please. Or these types of chests might show up more often. It's not like, oh yeah, chests that have hearts in them. No, oh hey, gambling chests might show up more often. But I want to take more hits, please. Please? No, sorry. It's tough shit for you. Get good, bitch. That's this game. Every character you unlock is through tasks, which are like, oh, beat one of the gods once. That's a task. And it does that until you've beaten them, I think, 20 times or something. And then there's some for like, oh, beat one of the gods while keep holding this type of weapon, because there's different types of weapons. I don't know what they all are, because I use the same handful of them, because I've found what I really like. And stuff like that. So there's like 80-something tasks, I think, that you do. Some of them will unlock new weapons that you can find in the level. Some of them unlock new blessings that you can eventually unlock. And blessings are something that you get before the level, and they just give you some benefit. You know, you might be able to find one that's like, oh, you get 2 shield at the beginning of the level that you get to have. So cool. So it just gives you a couple of hits extra that you can take before you start losing all your health, because they won't give me health. And stuff like that. There's a whole list of them, but all of the blessings you have to unlock through the task menu. There's also misfortunes that you can take if you hate yourself. Like a lot. And the reason why you might do that is because every misfortune you take increases a number on your list that allows you to take more blessings. So you kind of have to judge what you're willing to sacrifice for some benefits. And it doesn't fuck around. You're going to die, and it's going to suck, and it's going to hurt real bad. And most of those are unlocked from the very beginning, so you can see just how fucked you are if you take these things right from the get-go. It's real nice like that. There's also another type, but I haven't unlocked anything in it, and it seems like it's even worse than misfortune, so I rue the day that I unlock those. And yeah, other than that, you're going into stages, you're fighting through it, there's lots of different pathways, you can backtrack and go through them all. Some rooms will have enemies that you get to kill, some of them have a whole bunch of chests, some have stone in them that you have to blow up with grenades that you also have to find, there's chests that require keys that you also have to find, there's chests where you gamble with the money that you've made from killing enemies, there's sometimes stores where you can buy either brand new weapons or occasionally an artifact, some health or a shield or something, and then... if you keep evolving your character, you get other rooms that occasionally show up, like there's a fishing room that can show up. I actually haven't found it. I have recently unlocked it, but I haven't found one yet. There's a secondary store that is really expensive and has a whole shit ton of stuff in it, like 20 or like around 20-ish items in it that you can unlock and go to once. Per stage, and that's it. Once you leave it, you can't go back to it until you get to the next stage, and it has a whole brand new list of stuff. So, if you're going to go into that room, make sure you've gone everywhere else on that stage first, then go to it, so you can prepare yourself for the next stage. You can level up your weapons by destroying other weapons that you find. You can switch out your weapon for whatever other weapon you find. I suggest picking up the new weapon just to see how it plays. And if you like it, then deconstruct your old one. If you don't like it, well, pick up your old weapon and deconstruct it. Because everything that you don't pick up stays. So it's not like, oh, I didn't pick up this coin, so it disappears after 20 seconds. No, you can play through the entire area, check your minimap, be like, oh, I missed a coin in this room like 15 minutes ago. I might want to go and grab that just so I have a little extra coinage. So that's really nice, and since it allows you to deconstruct weapons and just leave them sitting around if you haven't deconstructed them, it allows you to really try out different weapons and stuff, so you can actually get a feel for them, which is really nice, because a lot of games like this, they're like, take the weapon or leave the weapon. That's your option. If you've left it, it's gone. So I really like that component to it. And, yeah, it's hard as shit. So have fun, because you're not making your character stronger at any point, realistically. So if you're like, oh, this is hard, welcome to life, kid.
Parnell, how did things go for you? Did you have a hard time with it?
Well, yeah, but I mean, in our defense, I mean, the game is intended with that, is built with that in mind. But that doesn't make it bad by any means. It just means it gives you something to keep coming back to. One thing I particularly liked about the game that Aki didn't mention is that the different boss fights, they do this interesting mechanic where the bosses themselves are going to do what they do, but at a certain point in the fight, the game will randomize an attack buff that they'll get that kind of makes the battle unique compared to other iterations of the same fight. So
we're caught up. Don't type it in, folks. We've caught up. We used too many of that earlier. Don't type it in. All right, continue. Sorry.
I'm scared. I don't know what's happening.
Unique.
That doesn't count. Fuck you.
It doesn't count when you spam it.
Exactly.
But
she's the one who had to mention it directly.
Well, I did, because I didn't want, you know, Scotty to type it in again.
Or no, what do you think of Neon Abyss?
Oh, I think it's a fun game. I haven't quite nailed down a particular love of the Hatchimon system yet. Not so much to say I dislike it, because I don't dislike it so much as I haven't pulled off a way to strategize with it, because it just seems like it happens when it happens. The way the game does it is when you pick up, there's tons of stuff to pick up in this game. There's relics, there's curios, and there's various things that just give you added benefits to your run or give you buffs that can be used by spending a currency called crystals, which you can acquire as you run through the run. But these Hatchimon things are eggs that lie on the ground. When you defeat monsters, they'll just show up, and like when you break a bottle or whatever, and you pick it up, and it floats behind you. And after a certain amount of time, the egg will hatch, and it becomes a little tiny bastard who might shoot bullets at enemies sometimes and eventually get knocked down, in which case you can run over it and kind of resuscitate it if it does. You'll have a ton of these things running behind you, and eventually, if you get a certain combination of them, it will evolve into another monster. Those are the monsters that actually matter, because they have their own particularly unique effects, which is interesting when they actually get activated, because that's the part where it's like, all right, cool, I finally got something that matters with these guys. This is what he does. But despite there being a recipe chart for them, I can't see, I guess maybe when I become a badass in the game, I have a hard time picturing myself just ignoring eggs until the right combination of eggs comes along and specifically get the guy I want. Especially because I don't know when specific color eggs will show up. Maybe there'll be a perk later on that you unlock that guarantees the specific combination shows up or something. I don't know. But
in the evolve tree, because again, doesn't help your character, there is one that allows you to more often find something that allows you to change one of your Hatchimon with a different one. So you can create whatever pathway you want to create a stronger one. I just have random ones so they'll all attack. Instead of having like three major Hatchimon, I can have 10 random ass little bastards that all attack. That's how I go personally.
I think the tiny ones do so little damage, though, that you almost want the real perk ones so you can actually get the side buff they provide. But I do like them. And hearing that, maybe I'll be the guy that ends up going ham on that thing. It might even be at least that user that has like benefits to them, too, because our whole gimmick is Hatchimon related. But
Hatchimon
I do enjoy...
are so cute.
Well, they are cute. They're a little derpy, too, but that's another story.
That's why they're cute.
Touché. I do find this game to be fairly fun. I do like that the Saya character gives me nice feelings of Scourgebringer, even if it's a little bit, because she's not dashing like that main character does, but just enough to make me feel like this is the character I want to use frequently for the sub-weapon she gets.
Which character is it?
Saya, she gets the sword as her sub-weapon.
Oh, see, I like the one with the kitty that picks up knocked-out Hatchimon. Because they get knocked out a lot for me, since I have the little shitty ones instead of the big ones.
I can kind of see that, yeah. I mean, my problem is I always feel like I never have too much trouble getting the little tiny bastards, so I'm like, I'll get you when I get you. But at the same time, if I didn't have to worry about them, maybe it wouldn't be such a big thing after at all. So who knows? That might be worth messing with, but I'm stuck solely with the main guy and the sword woman, because, again, once the sword woman came about, I was like, well, I like dashing and slashing. That's my gimmick.
Fair. So. Talking about Hatchimon reminded me of something else in this game.
Pokemon? Not kid.
No. It doesn't really explain things very well at all for anything, realistically. It kind of just expects you to figure shit out, and that doesn't always work. For instance, there's an artifact that you can find that basically says, oh, if you use this, every 4 standard eggs you have will turn into a silver egg. I don't, that means nothing to me. I always assume that means it's going to turn into a strong hatchman, but none of the silver eggs have ever hatched. So I don't know if that just makes it useless or what, because the game won't explain anything. And it's kind of like that with everything. It tells you what the effect that it does, but it doesn't explain what that means. It just says, oh, this does this. But
it's probably, it's probably leading into the aspect of like how like Binding of Isaac will do it, where there's a lot of different items with basic effects, but then the real benefit comes from actually using it and noticing what it does. And that generates conversation in the group that says, hey, I discovered that the silver egg actually has 5% chance of getting the Omega Mega Hatchimon. And it just becomes, you know, from social fodder for the community, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But like you're saying, if you want everything explained out, that's not going to do you any favors either.
Yeah, I don't know how many runs where I've had silver eggs. I'm just like, I don't know what these are. I don't know if this is good or if it's
there
bad.
There is a topic on the Steam forums asking about the egg stuff, and one of the comments is, just keep playing and you'll understand eventually.
So, yep, see? So it nailed
that's
it.
That's the like, problem with the game to me. I don't go. Like
20
that.
Bucks need told. A verdict. You two talk long enough. Let's go.
Well,
let's
bye,
go. Ahead, let's go.
Mind.
Let's go. 20 bucks. Let's go. Let's go.
I mean, you're doing that. Be careful. It's going to come back to bite you. It's going to come back to bite you.
You know, I think I like it, so I think I'm going to go ahead and buy it. And yes, I drug that out on purpose. Fuck you, Jeff.
Okay. Brunel, verdict?
Already said mine. See, I'm going fast. I'm on speed mode now. Bye.
Yeah. Cool. Next up, Fretless, The Wrath of Riftsin, developed by Ritual Studios, published by Playdigious Originals, released June 17th on PC for $14.99. In this turn-based RPG, wield powerful legendary instruments, gather mighty riff attacks, and save the land from Rick Riftsin's devilish goons and musical hybrid monsters. For now, what is Fretless, The Wrath of Riftsin?
See, I'm mad because I like this game, so I can't go fast on it like I said I would. That's stupid. So
keep it under 20 minutes and we're good.
Well, that shouldn't be a problem. So in this game, you are an individual who has watched a TV show that, or rather, an infomercial that's noting that the Battle of the Bands is about to take place, and you, the main character, want to get in on that action. So you immediately embark on a journey to reach the Battle of the Bands and participate in it. But this game is weird, so of course it's not as safe for it as getting a bus ticket and going out to New York City. Nope. Instead, you are traveling on foot to get there. And your world, albeit modern, is riddled with jerkbag monsters, some of which are music themed and others of which are just monsters themed. So, combat. This is I wouldn't call it a turn-based game because you have to hit buttons to react, but I will call it turn-based in the sense that you get a turn and then the opponent gets a turn. But when it's time for you to go into combat, you can take in one of a number of different instruments that you unlock as you play the game. Not in the traditional sense of a RPG where you get one weapon and then later on you get an upgraded version of the same weapon like the Buster Sword and the Omega Sword. And instead, you just get physical instruments like a guitar or a bass guitar, acoustic guitar or a bass guitar, for example. And each weapon has its own play style or deck that is associated with that weapon. So when you're using that weapon, you're going in knowing that this is the kind of gameplay style I like for this game. So that doesn't mean that you just instinctively know. You'll likely end up using them and figuring out for yourself what you like and when you like it. And the weapons themselves all play fairly differently. How do you use the weapons? Well, each weapon has a series of cards or abilities that form a deck. On your turn, 6 of them will get loaded up at the bottom of the screen, and you want to slot them into the melody bar at the top of the screen. Best description saying, select 3 attacks, and then hit the Y button to shred, which is to use the attacks. status-based attacks, you don't have to do anything. Once you hit the thing and it triggers it, the guy will do his thing. And it's pretty particularly awesome because I think the animations on every particular attack in this game are splendid, to be blunt. But when you got an attack, you need to pay careful attention to the animations of the main character. Though, albeit it doesn't particularly hit to the rhythm specifically, if you are listening to the music while you do the attacks, it sometimes makes it easier to time when things need to be pressed. But as you're watching the main character, he will glow, he'll make a flash of yellow at a certain point during his animation. At that point, if you mash the A button, he'll turn green, which means you got the special bonus of damage for timing the attack properly and doing additional damage. After that's over, your enemy, after you do all three of your attacks, the enemy will get a turn and they'll attack you. And you can do the same thing to them where if you're watching their animation, if you hit the button while the enemy's yellow highlighted, you'll be able to block his attack and reduce the damage from it. You would think that would be enough to say, well, this game is pretty cool. But there is a lot of fun play mechanics that are at work here. The obvious one, of course, is you can build up a specific currency called Crescendo by doing various attacks and blocking attacks. And once you build it up, eventually you can trigger it at any point you want for a pretty much free attack that will use sort of like, I don't know, like a DJ Max Technica, Guitar Hero, any number of press button to beat rhythm game mechanic stylings, where the buttons will scroll across the screen, you hit them to the beat, and depending on how many times you hit the button in accordance to the melody and the designated buttons, you'll do more damage to all the enemies on the screen. So there's that. But then there's other things, like, again, the fact that actual instruments play completely differently from each other. For example, without going into too much, my favorite weapon by concept is the synthesizer. The synthesizer's gameplay style is meant to do most, if not all, of its damage from status ailments. So you want to do attacks that will stack status ailments on your enemies. And this game does it in a special way where an enemy can have a certain number of status ailments on it at a time, or status buffs for that matter. Sometimes it's three, I've seen four, or whatever. You can have as many as that number on there, but if you do an additional status ailment, it'll knock one of them off. But there's a specific status ailment that only triggers once you've knocked it off of the actual row. So once you've seen that you laid it out on there, your goal will just be just hit them with whatever you can just to bump them off the chain to do the damage that's associated with them. And then you can upgrade the status ailments while they're on the chain. It just ends up being a lot of fun to play around with, seeing what status ailments you can hit the enemy with at any given time. In some respects, the effect is random, so you don't even know what you're going to give them until you do it. But just playing with the status ailments gives you a fun time actually engaging. And plus, the animations are cool because you're like riding a freaking skateboard off of a ramp that disappears, and then you teleport and then jump and kick the synthesizer into the monster's face. Weird stuff like that. Whoever designed this game clearly had a ton of fun with all the animations and all the attack concepts. In addition to that, before going into some of the other mechanics in the game, I also think it's particularly cool that this game doesn't exactly have a specific battle theme, barring like boss stuff, music and such. Instead, the battle music is based on the instrument you're playing. So if you're using the synthesizer, it'll be a synthy vibe OST for the battles. If you're using the acoustic guitar, it's kind of got an acoustic vibe to playing on the instruments when you're battling in the monsters. And I think that's an added touch to it. It would be cool if in the future updates or whatever, they may add some more like music that can play over the battles for the instruments, because that's one of the big highlights I think this game has. But it's just a cool mechanic that they obviously that they had fun with, and it really shows. Outside of combat, you are able to go to shops and do a number of things. One, you can purchase items that can be used to upgrade the various effects you have on your instrumental deck. So you like the effect of this one thing? Well, you might want to upgrade it because it's going to make it even better to use. Kind of sucks that each instrument can only have 16 items slotted to it for battle attacks. So eventually, as you start to unlock more effects by finding rock star statues littered throughout the map or the world map, you will find yourself stuck having to decide which attacks you think deserve to stand around and which need to get kicked to the curb. But that's part of the fun, I guess, being that it is technically a sort of a deck builder in that regard. If you go to a mod bench, which they're generally littered throughout the world as well, usually in towns, but sometimes before boss fights, you can accessorize your instruments and equip them with various mods that will trigger effects of their own, such as something as simple as, you know, at the beginning of combat, you will get an additional 6 shield, or for the acoustic, I think I remember seeing one where it was like at the second, on the second string, on the second phase of battle, you'll get an additional 7 strum, which is specific to only that weapon and how its attacks work. So you'll find yourself going, oh, well, if I want to do really good on specifically the second turn, this will be fantastic. Though it might not be so great for a boss fight, because that's going to take way more than 2 turns. My personal favorite mod that I've come across so far is one where I just straight up get a damage buff if I use 2 of the same attack in a row on the on the attack meter on my choice of 3 attacks. So they give you a lot to customize and work with. The characterizations are pretty funny. The battle system is just fun. The graphics are great. Like, this game came out of nowhere and surprised me. Like, yes, I really, really want to get back to Clair Obscur at some point, because that's in the game of the year running. But this is a definite situation where I can say, I don't feel like this detour was particularly bad. This was a great detour. I am enjoying Fretless, and I think you will too. If you find yourself saying, well, screw you, Perno, I can't tear myself away from Clair Obscur, well, play it when Clair Obscur is over, because this game is still worthy of your time. It's a fantastic ride, and it feels nice for this current age of gameplay or of RPGs, because there are games like it, but I feel like this one is unique enough that I'm not out there trying to find which ones they are. This one does the job very well. I am glad it came out, and I can wholeheartedly recommend it to anybody who likes RPGs or people who are very interested in the idea of like tinkering with instruments and playing with instruments.
All right, well, it's $20. You think? Or no, $15. I'm wrong. $15. What's your verdict? Easier.
It's an easier buy recommendation.
Very good. And soundtrack, what do you think of that?
I think the soundtrack is great, too. Especially the boss battles. The boss battle theme is really, really good. So,
nice. I think I'm going to go right there. Soundtrack is available for $7 on Steam. You'll want to pick that up. But overall, sounds like a winner, huh?
Oh, it's very much a winner.
Sweet. All right, next up, Cypher Zero, developed and published by Zapdot, released July 22nd on Steam for $14.99. A minimalistic logic game. I got to add something here. A unique minimalistic logic game. Can you solve for X? Pernell, what's Cypher Zero?
Cypher Zero is the game I spent the most time playing on the airplane this weekend. So there you go. That's how you know it's good. Anyway, what is the actual game? Well, you described it in the sense of being a minimalist game. But one thing I like about it is that think of this is a Chris question for sure. Picross, what is the actual name of those puzzles? Chris is like, I don't know what you're talking about, buddy. I'm not
Picross, isn't it?
No, there's a specific name for them.
Pictograph?
Do what?
It might be.
What's the official name of Pictograph?
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear you address me specifically.
Oh, damn.
It's okay.
Were you asking if I played?
Any Picross game. I was trying to remember what the actual name of those types of puzzles are.
Oh, Nonogram?
Nonogram, thank you, my friend.
Yeah, no problem.
So this game uses the concept of the nonogram and kind of puts it on its head in a very cool way. Unlike a lot of games like this, like if you play the Picross game, usually the game will explain to you, here are the rules of Picross or solving a nonogram. Do this and then this. This game does none of that. Instead, what it does is it takes you through a series of levels, and on each level, it will ramp you through a series of puzzles that increase in difficulty, and they explain nothing to you. Instead, they will they'll ease you into the concepts that they want you to understand so that it makes sense as you solve the puzzles. For example, you might see a level that will actually early on use basic nonogram, you know, concepts where it'll be 3 squares in a straight line, and you'll see a white line pointing towards not even an arrow, just a dash pointing towards the line of three blocks. And you just kind of think, I think that means one of those blocks needs to be filled in. So you fill it in. Attempt to solve for X. The game goes, correct, you solved it. Move on to the next level. And it'll kind of build on that concept. And you hope to solve it and get it right again. And you do, and you move on again. And it builds on it again and again. And eventually, oh, crap, this is a tough puzzle, but I think I can solve it. And you go through the process, you solve it, and the game's like, okay. And as you solve each of these puzzles, there's an actual image in the background that is meant to represent the location you're in that is being more and more populated to display a really nice animated art piece, such as, for example, a farmland where you might start seeing wheat blowing in the background and a train going by and wind blowing. It's all really nice. But then once you've filled in a certain number of levels, you'll move on to the next section of levels, and they might introduce another concept, and they start to get weirder and weirder. One that has particularly got me stuck is a situation where they're combining the dots. Dots being, if you, well, gosh, that's the problem. I don't even want to say it because it's more fun to figure out what they are in the game for yourself. But without telling you what the puzzle, what the concept is, I will say the puzzle I'm stuck on right now combines four different concepts that the game taught you throughout the run and is like, solve for this. I'm like, oh, fucking no. I'm just a man trying to figure it out. Does it mean I'm not going to try? No, I'm going to keep doing it until I solve it. I might put it down and come back, but I'm going to solve it because this game really does do it right. I booted up on the plane as I started to take off thinking, well, just a little bit won't hurt. I just want to play around just to get an understanding of what this game is going to be. Maybe I'll tinker with it a little bit more later, but just get a jot for it. I spent the entire flight playing it. And I didn't want to turn it off. I only turned it off because I had to get out of my seat and get my luggage. And on the flight back, I played it some more. Like, I played other games when I could fit them in over the course of the weekend. But for the flying, it was all about Cypher Zero. The puzzling in this game is legit. And when you solve a puzzle, you feel like a freaking smart person. But when you fail a puzzle, you also feel like a damn idiot as you're trying to figure out what is the one thing I didn't get. It does do a decent job, of course, of at least telling you where you may have messed up, because when you go to solve it, it'll flash through all the rules that need to be solved. And if you fail a specific rule, it'll go, and you'll see that symbol being in red until you attempt to solve it again. So at least let you know this is the thing you screwed up. Figure out where you went wrong with that. And I appreciate that. There are some elements you can use, such as like flagging blocks, if you want to make sure to make note of locations that are suspicious to you as the player. I almost never use those because for some reason my brain doesn't process that. Maybe it may be a good thing to say, flag it. If you're like, okay, I tried this block, it doesn't work, I better flag it to not go back and try it again. But that's not how I've been doing it. I just try to run through each rule and like, this must be it. Damn it, it isn't. It's a good game. There's not a whole lot to say about it, but that won't result in me spoiling the game for other players.
No.
I just want to say that if you like games that don't hold your hand, that let you feel smart when you figure out what the game's trying to lay down for you without explicitly telling you what it's laying down for you, you're going to like this game a lot. If you like nonograms, but you want something that's a little tougher and outside of the typical norm of those games, you're going to love this game. It's just a very good game. And hell, I wouldn't mind seeing RPGs or other games use this kind of concept in solving puzzles in those games. Like, you know, Solid Snake needs to crack code to get into a safe. Well, solve this weird puzzle that's locking the gate shut. It might piss off most of the people playing it because they ain't solving it, but it's fun to see it try. So, very recommended this game is.
All right. $15. What do you think?
Easy buy it.
Sounds good. Next up,
this was a Griffin. Good night for me for all these things. I was just saying, this is a good night of reviews for me on this show. Everything's a buy at this point.
Yeah, everything sounds good tonight. But next up, Griffin, developed by Edia, published by Rattlaika Games, released July 11th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $5.99. The Griffin battle tank has been developed as countermeasure against powerful neighbor countries. However, its designer was captured by the enemy country. Now his granddaughter got into the Griffin to take her solo mission to rescue her grandfather. Chris, what's Griffin?
It is a tank shooter game. Who is Griffin? I don't know. That is to say, the protagonist of the game is a blue-haired lady who features aesthetically in the game quite a lot, and yet apparently doesn't have a name. I don't know. I couldn't find one. I tried to look. So this is a little bit of a curious one because this was a Japan-only game that was developed by Telenet. You'll know Telenet from all kinds of shooters. You know, Gaia Res and Granada and, you know, also all the, like, Ernest Evans and El Viento and, like, yeah, Telenet, huge presence when it comes to Sega games and things like that, and also Turbo games. So, yeah, this is one of those. It is one of the only games that they made for the Game Gear, or at least published, or whatever they did with it, because I guess this is also a different company, but I mean, it says Telenet on the cart, but and it is crazy expensive. Like, it's like I'm seeing it up to $1,600 for a brand new copy.
Jesus.
Up to, like, it's kind of a huge range, but yeah, it's like a really expensive Japan only Game Gear cart. So yeah, it's very nice that they brought it out to begin with, because for one, people don't usually emulate Game Gear stuff quite a lot. And usually Game Gear stuff doesn't get released outside of, you know, outside of these kind of releases. So that's already pretty nice. But yeah, the game itself, as far as that goes, fairly simple. So you are the, like I said, you basically drive the tank, the Griffin tank. And it can move in, you know, the eight directions. You can stop and, you know, shoot in any of the eight directions. Enemies are going to come at you, or, you know, you'll be up against turrets and things like that. You have to go through wooded areas. Of course, wood being completely invulnerable to all artillery and bombs. But yeah, basically you clear a few levels, defeat a boss in each one, and you're done. It's one of those games that does give you a second loop. It's about four stages, I think, and then there's a second loop, and if you beat that, then you get the quote-unquote proper ending. And of course, it has you know, achievements to match. In fact, yeah, we'll get to that. But yeah, like, basically your tank can take a few hits. You've got a nice multicolor, you know, red, yellow, and blue bar on the right side of the screen indicating how much energy you have left. And that's it. That's the only hub you really get. You shoot a regular bullet with the B button, and then the A button is a screen-clearing bomb, which you can pick up more of, but you have a limited amount of. In the start menu, you can change to sub-weapon or SPWP, which I guess is special weapon. Those, I think, change depending on what you pick up in the game, but either way, you can only shoot those upwards, so I guess they're more meant for bosses or special situations, because otherwise you are, like, kind of shooting all over the place. And yeah, like I said, that's kind of it for the actual video game. It's very pretty, and also every time you beat a level, you get a nice pinup picture of the girl with the tank. Including, like I said, the endings. They're not, like, erotic or anything like that. They're just cutesy pinup type pictures. And yeah, the main meat of the, I guess that's the meat of it, but the dressing is enormous. This game, as a retro re-release, you know, you usually get, like, a lot of options. We talked about those in the last review quite a lot, the beat-em-up collection. This one actually is, like, double that, just for this little game. You have, like, scale modes, you have frame skip, you have shaders for the video, you can change all kinds of things with the input outside of, like, the basic controls. You have cheats for infinite bombers, health, and lives. You have rewind and save states. You have a jukebox, a gallery of pictures. You have the manual, although the manual was not translated from Japanese, so good luck there. But there are more pinup pictures, so You have a set of, like I said, achievement goals that you can do, the last of which is to beat the game twice in a loop. They don't keep you from those if you cheat your way through the game. Don't ask me how I know. But yeah, there's a whole lot of these extras in this game. The game itself, if you don't die a lot, that is to say, if you turn on cheats or something, is like 12 minutes long. This is not a long video game. It is a, like I said, it's a tank shooter where you go through a level, defeat a boss, repeat 4 times, and then, you know, well, it's different bosses every time, of course, but like, you know, and then you just loop it twice, and then you're done. What a whole bunch of dressing for this this particular type of game that's just one singular Game Gear game that also is extremely expensive and important to certain people, I suppose. It was a fun little one. It was fun to research.
Cool. $6 verdict.
Yeah, just go ahead and buy it. I mean, you know, you're, God, just try and go on eBay and buy a real copy. Yeah, right.
All right, well, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called Galacticon, developed by Raiden Games, published by Dolores Entertainment, released July 18th on PS4 and PS5 for $4.99. Humans are tiny creatures of an outer belt planet that, thanks to their biomechanical monstrosities, have invaded, exploited, and enslaved most species in the galaxy. The Interstellar Council is met for the first time in eons and determined that there is only one option left to exterminate the plague, an option that has always been feared because it could be as powerful as dangerous. Invoke the Galacticon, deadly legendary creature, half god, half machine. Pray everything goes well. Ernell and Chris, both of you played Galacticon. Who wants to start? What is Galacticon?
I guess I'll start. I'm just jumping into the dead air.
Either one. I don't care.
Okay.
Aki, start. What is Galacticon?
Yeah, Aki, go ahead and do it.
It's a video game that requires you to kill a god.
Cool. Pernell, what do you think?
Sounds good to me.
These Persona spinoffs are getting out of control.
All right, some talk about the game. Go.
Okay, so Galacticon is a Finn's arcade game, which I've covered quite a few of those. They're usually games that somewhat resemble arcade games that you already know, but they usually have enough twists and turns and kind of different things going on that they actually end up being their own individual thing. This particular one is a little bit based on what I'm going to say is probably Joust, but also Defender, but also a little bit of, I don't know, like, you know what, I'm just going to leave it at those two. So you have your... You have your god, your jetpack god, whatever, whom you can move about in, like I said, by hitting the square button or up on the stick. You move them across platforms, things like that. Enemies persistently come from both sides of the screen. The screen is a wraparound screen. You defeat these enemies with your lasers. You can do a really fast auto shoot if you want, so you don't even have to like worry about sitting there and pew-pewing all day. You can actually just toggle on an auto shoot. And what you're looking out for, though, is not just defeating the enemies, but the captured alien species that come through. And they'll come through in cages. Some of them are already on the platforms. You collect them. You go to the bottom of the screen where there are these kind of rescue pods, and you put 4 of them into a, you know, into one of the pods, and that pod's finished. And if you finish all 3 pods, you're done with the level. And then you do a little bit of a weird shooter thing where you're shooting asteroids, but, you know, left and right, even though the screen is scrolling upward, and then you try to make it to your ship, and then you move on. And like I said, it's got a few little twists and turns and variations on that, but that's kind of like the gist of it, is that the you get bonus points if you rescue in a strange move, if you rescue the same color of these species, because they just look like little like toboggan heads. If you get the like colors into the pods, you get bonus points for that. So if you've mostly got blue in this one pod, like 3 out of the 4 or something like that, that's like a couple thousand extra bonus points. When you die, which is inevitable, of course, you will then get a QR code, which will allow you an opportunity to upload your highest score to the online leaderboard, as well as unlocking extras, including hints for secrets.
Ooh.
I'll drop it off there.
For now, give us some more.
The funny part is there's not a lot more to say. I mean, I would say that I got a sense of enjoyment at the idea that this was, at its core, what could have been a long-lost game for the Atari back when this was this type of game with all the rage. And I got kind of caught up in the idea of like getting the rescuing the aliens, because one thing that makes this game particular in the sense that it will make the pros stand out from the people that are just playing it is that you beat the levels by saving the aliens. You save 4 aliens per pod and then you are free to escape. However, if you are able to get the same aliens into their respective pods so that they're one cohesive group per pod, you get bonus points. And they added a couple of little added caveats that too, because as the game gets a little more panicky, you might find yourself going, well, better to save one than none. You just got to get them in there or whatever. So you'll start dumping them. But there are these little light relationships between the alien types. Like, I can't remember the specific one, so I can't even, like, the blue one is this. But I do know in particular is one that if you put it in a pod with a different type, it will potentially, it could potentially assimilate with that alien type and add to the combo, or it could just outright murder one of them in this prison with it. And you lose points for that because now you have a dead alien in your cell. So the, when I started playing the game, the first 2 times I played, I was like, let me just see how far I can get. But after that, any subsequent play was me saying, okay, no, I got to get the combinations of aliens. That's the only way I'm going to do this. Not to say I'm going to let myself lose a level if I can't, but because there's also a timer ticking down, so you can't just sit there on the level forever. But
yeah,
I did find myself going, I'm going to do all I can to make sure that I get the same aliens in each cell. I want a harmonious, high-scoring, hootin'-falutin', you know, high-point extravaganza going on with my rescue operation.
I was just going to say, I love the animation, the little details, like the little animation of the one of the aliens that's a traitor, like pulling out his little gun and shooting one of the other ones.
Yeah, it's like soccer.
It was like really adorable.
Murder. Yes, it is. Murder. Anyway,
continue. I just wanted to interrupt.
No, I'm glad you did. It's a good thing to point out because that is definitely something worth noting for the game. There's a lot of personality in the game in general. This, you wouldn't think it looking at it in a series of screenshots or whatever, but in execution, there is a lot of personality you kind of see from the game as it's being played. I had a lot of fun with it. I haven't had the arcade get the high score experience in a long time, but for those who have listened to the show and give two shits what I have to say, you will know that I am a sucker for going to arcades and just saying their high scores on them as Pac-Man machines and then leaving. So that I am a big fan of the idea of like going for the high score on a game that has a simple loop, and this one executes that very well.
Pernell, I want to know, did you upload any of your scores with the QR code?
Of course not. Not until I have a perfect score.
Oh, well, see,
I'm not ready to put my name out there yet.
No, I got a really crap score, and it asked for my initials, and I just wrote N-O. And then I uploaded that, and I was 79th best in the world.
So what I should do then is set a score, put in yes.
Yes, and then try and reach 78. I don't know.
That will have to happen.
Yeah, it's there. The top score is like pretty hefty, but like it drops off pretty sharply after that. And you can actually, if you're playing this right now, you can probably claim a pretty high spot on that board if you're so inclined. Just saying.
Now is the time.
All right. Well, it's a $5 game. What do you two think?
Yeah, I'm not even going to say. Oh, good.
I was going to say it's an easy buy. It's Finn's Arcade. They always put out good stuff. It's like, it's almost a, it's a challenge to try and find something.
Switch. Dolores Entertainment published it on PS5 and PS4.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, either way, it's one of these games, and like, it's a struggle to even find anything wrong with them, you know? Like, they're so good. So, yeah, easy buy it.
And I'd say that Marvel wishes they could publish a game as good as this one from Dolores Entertainment. So, I'm going to go with a solid buy it. I'm not even... I sometimes I question low-price games getting a fuck it, why not? Because it's fun to say that. I think this game deserves to not get that. I think it deserves to be purchased because it is a good game, and I can comfortably recommend it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Even among its ilk, it's actually a kind of a standout, really. And I do like the online high score via QR code thing, too.
Very good. Well, that wraps it up for this episode. Can I direct y'all attention to the stream? But I could show you what the episode art for this
one
is going to be.
I'm looking.
There's the full thing right there.
Nice. Hot SML.
I'm having too much fun doing these lately.
It looks like it says hot smell. And that's what we're experiencing right now.
I had to do a lot of work to get the hands in the hoodie over Pearl's face.
And over my chin.
Yeah, the hand over your chin and then the hair over Jacob's face.
Yeah, yeah. No, great job with that.
Anytime to cover Jacob's face.
I'm proud of this.
Aki can be the chicken breathing fire.
One day I'll get a picture of Aki and she'll start getting put in these videos.
Don't let that happen.
You think that's cute that you think that.
I mean, worst case scenario, you can just find a random face on the internet or something and be like, every week it's a different person that's actually Aki.
No, don't tell him things like that. He might
do it. In the meantime, I'll just keep using Jacob for everything.
It's the opposite of identity theft.
True.
All right, music this episode. We are going to play Bowser's Castle from the 1UPs.
Nice.
We talked about hot sauce, and Bowser's Castle has lava. So,
I'm for it.
I thought it was hot sauce down there.
Maybe we'll be lucky and it'll have chicken wings too.
Maybe.
I know.
All right. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
God, I wonder if Wingstop's open.
bullshit.